and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. This is show number 52, September 16th, 2003, recorded at a little ranch house on Southwood Drive here in Lufkin, Texas. Good to have you with us for the next hour. We're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the show, ladies and gentlemen, Don Shaw.
Well, Mr. Houston, the question of the day is, did you bring us that cool weather we've had here lately?
Well, I probably had something to do with it. I'm not going to admit it.
I'll take partial credit for it.
Okay. Don Patterson, hi there.
Yes, sir, and I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Sure hope it's not a train.
It's certainly good to have you with us today, Donald. I'm Tom Houston, but ladies and gentlemen, if you would please, stand. Would you stand, please?
At attention?
No, just stand if you can.
The creator and producer of The Blind Handyman, Phil Parr.
We'd like to thank the Fox Television Network for making Al Franken's name a household word. Isn't it great? Wesley Clark's going to announce tomorrow, Pat.
Yeah, you will. Good.
I'll be in Little Rock, Arkansas. Wesley Clark. They've gone to Shreveport. They may circle back through Little Rock and see his. they're talking about it. She may do it. He's going to make his announcement tomorrow.
Why he picked Little Rock? Is that?
Well, Bill Clinton. You know?
Bill Clinton's out in California trying to prop up Gray Davis, I think.
Yeah, and they've stopped the recall.
They did. That's great.
Isn't that amazing?
I think it's great.
Isn't that amazing? Politics have just gone crazy.
He's a Carolina guy, isn't he? One of the Carolinas, this guy you're talking about?
No, you're talking about Edwards, John Edwards.
John Edwards.
Okay. John Edwards.
He announced yesterday.
Well, I thought if he was from North Carolina, you know, you would go to Arkansas. Nothing against North Carolina.
With the storm coming. Nothing political there.
Nothing at all political. I love North and South Carolina. Trust me.
Yeah, is that right? I've never been there.
I have. I've been to Gastonia, North Carolina.
Well, yes, I bet that was a trip.
Oh, it was wonderful.
I bet it was.
What were you doing, selling zines there?
I spent a week there one night.
You were selling zines?
Yeah, I was.
Door
to door.
My experience with the Carolinas, it was kind of like living here. My sister lived there, and I spent some time with her, but you had to go 13 miles to get brewski, you know. I always go to South Carolina, so.
Yeah. Almost like here, then.
It's almost like here.
The entire state of North Carolina is dry?
No, it was where she lives. I mean, it was. It's kind of the East Texas of North Carolina or something.
That's pretty sad. It's a dry town. I don't know. We kind of enjoy the journey now. It gives us something to do, you know. It's some place to go besides hang around here. Let me just mention real quick that the deadline for the cruise has passed, but just for you, and I mean you, I'm talking right to you, if you want in, you call me this weekend. I'll get you in.
Special offer.
Special offer. I'll get you in at the good rate. We need it. We need to. Of course, now, if you don't pay the gratuity, like we have a friend who didn't, you get a better rate, and you don't need the transportation from the airport. But if you want in, let us know. We'll get you in at the good rate.
Anyway, that gratuity, you either pay it now or later.
They'll make you pay it before you get off the boat. You're going to pay the gratuity. It doesn't make any difference. So.
I think of John Bennett every time you say the word gratuity.
I think he was the first person that I ever heard it from.
What is the standard gratuity?
Yeah, we took him to a restaurant, and he said, where did we go? We went to El Chico. He said, well, I'll pay this bill, and you take out the standard gratuity.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't know there was. I didn't know that was negotiable. I thought it was just...
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Old John Bennett. We love you, John Bennett.
When are those guys coming back?
I think she's going to Vegas on October the 30th.
Around Halloween, give or take.
It's Thursday, the day before Halloween. I think they're coming then.
So we have both of them coming this time? John's not going to be a holdout.
I don't know if Bennett's coming or not. I talked to Connolly yesterday, who's got a virus, by the way, in his computer. It's screwed up. Maybe he's hearing this show and maybe he's not. Anyway, Blind Handyman show. Probably not. Show number 52. Can you believe that?
Man,
isn't years it? Worth.
Incredible.
52 little Blind Handyman shows. And everybody, I want to say hi to, is it Keith Patterson?
James.
Is that his name? Not James. I think it's Keith. It's on the list. Anyway, worked for Freedom Scientific.
It is,
Called and Keith. Got $180 of my money today.
Way to go, Keith.
Way to go, Keith.
Upgrade time.
He's worked for the Freedom Scientific, and he is on the handyman list and listens to Blind Like Me and Handyman Show, and we're glad to have you.
All right.
Keith Patterson. We appreciate it. Spread the word. Help us out.
Yeah.
All right, Tommy, what you got for us?
Okay, here's an email. It says, you may remember a discussion we had a while back on the HJ pad. I'm sending this to Blind Like Me and Blind Handyman because I don't know which list John Justice wrote of his support for the HJ pad. Mm-hmm. I have been having major reading problems with Microsoft Word, so I switched to the pad, taking the file that I was working on along with me to see if the problem would disappear. I didn't get far enough in to find out if it had, but a new problem reared its ugly head. JAWS was only reading parts of words and lines. It made the whole thing quite unintelligible.
Okay.
This from Joel Branch. Do you know what's going on?
Yeah, I don't exactly know what's going on, but I may know how to correct it. Do in search escape a couple of times and see if that doesn't refresh the document. If not, go to... I don't know anything. I just know what I've been told. Go to the menu bar, hold the space bar down, and hit Alt. And you'll get this little list that says minimize, maximize. Hit maximize.
To maximize the page.
And that may solve your problem.
That's what I suspect the problem is. A page can be either in a small format or, of course, maximize. I bet you it's in the small format and it may only be reading
part. Yeah, do maximize, and it will, that may...
And then can it, because it's a screen reader... It's not reading what it's not seeing.
It can't read what it doesn't see. But a lot of times, insert escape will correct that. But if not, hold the space bar down, hit the Alt key, and you go down to maximize.
But then the shortcut, instead of arrowing down that, you could just, after you open that menu, you can hit X, and it'll do the same thing. It'll maximize that screen.
Okay.
So just a
will it?
Little shortcut. It sure will.
Okay. So that may solve that. Because I've had JAWS. It's just, screen readers are just frustrating. I mean, there's no way around it. I hate computers.
They're just
I do, man. They drive me nuts. I can come out here and wire. I can do things all day long, but I cannot. Computers just drive me crazy because they don't do the same thing every time.
But it's worth a try. Give either one of those things a try, and one of them I bet you will work.
Little JAWS advice. And if not, call Keith Patterson.
He could answer the question.
By the way, he's the guy that, remember we had this email a long time ago at the first show about this guy sitting in front of his house, and he couldn't get this faucet off?
Yeah, sure.
Just faucet off, and he ended up bending the pipe.
And him and his brother got to working on it and stuff.
Yeah, and they heated it and started drinking.
That was a good email.
And heating the pipe, and his wife came out and told him they were nuts. And remember that?
Well, that's him. Really?
Yeah, that was him. That's who that is.
That was neat. He needs to come on and talk about that one.
We probably need to have him on as a guest, don't we?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Okay,
Tom.
Here's a guy named Spyro sent this to us. He says, hi, I have a studio of sorts in my home.
Yeah.
I have run 220 lines, and I'm going 120 ground to reduce noise. I then go through all kinds of power cleaners that I find work for expensive audio gear, but I'm not going through a UPS. Well, recently, my heat pump AC has been causing the CD transport and other sensitive digital products to stutter, fail, skip track, stop recording, and other wonderfully loss of time and money type things. Anybody know what's going on?
I would move. That's my advice. Just get out. Move. Just pack up.
Well,
and
I don't see how they could. I don't see how the heat pump could affect them. See, I don't have all that. I didn't run it. I don't have any 220.
He said that the equipment had been configured this way for at least 3 years, and the AC is original.
I did have a UPS, but I lost half of it. In the lightning hit, I swear. Half of this UPS, which is a universal power supply, that has a battery in it, and it will run your stuff. I think it said it would run everything about 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I never got a chance to try it, but I lost half of it in this lightning hit, some way or another.
So it wouldn't have done a lot of good then.
So it wouldn't have done a whole lot of good. But I don't know what your problem. I have no idea. But I don't have all that power. What, a power cleaner? Is that what it says?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what that is. I have a studio, but I don't have any idea. He must have some more expensive equipment than I do. You need. I'm philparr@txucom.net. Email me, and let's talk about this. Unless it was on the same phase, or not on the same phase, but on the same. I mean, there's the breaker boxes between you and.
Unless they were getting one leg of that 220
That's the only way I could figure it would bother anything.
Yeah.
That's sounds more like an electrician type problem than anything else. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay.
Well, we're on it today, aren't we?
Yeah. There have been some excellent posts regarding buying a router. Now, this is on, from the group page. I found this article at the following website that I thought might help someone. It's www.homefocus.com. It's from a radio show here in Canada that is pretty helpful and quite entertaining. Here's the article. It's called Starting Out Right. When I began building my tool collection in the late 1970s, I was like most novice woodworkers in that I did it in isolation. I didn't know any veteran woodworkers to advise me, so I bought what looked good to my inexperienced eyes.
Yeah.
In the order that seemed to make sense. But with the passage of years and the accumulation of experience, the folly of those early purchases became apparent. If you're building a general-purpose woodworking shop and intend to stay in the craft for the long haul, I can help. It's impossible to completely avoid wasting money on tools, especially little ones. You have to expect a certain amount of that. The stakes are higher, however, when tooling up with big-ticket power tools that are your workshop foundation.
Yep.
Now, the issue is not just about getting the most for your money. Choosing well is also about investing in enough tool capacity to let you grow as a craftsman.
Yep.
Now, the last part is key. Your skills and expectations will grow faster than you think. Make allowances for it. The main reason people buy tools poorly is because they buy for current needs, not their best guess of future ones. And believe me, you've always need more tool than you think.
That's true.
Here's the lowdown on three of the most important power tools in the order I recommend you buy them.
All right.
Okay, you start with a table saw. I've heard you say that, Phil. There's a steady stream of new machines that claim to replace the table saw, but I still maintain that there's no substitute for this tool. If you're planning to build furniture and do general household fix-up, the table saw should be your first major tool purpose.
For a general tool, that's true.
Okay.
Telephone answering machine would be the second.
Would be the second thing you really need to purchase.
I get more reader requests for advice on table saw selection than any other power tool. Part of this is due to the substantial investment involved, but there's another reason, too. The table saw fills varieties widely. The table saw varies widely. There are $2,000 stationary cabinet saws at the top end of the consumer line.
Yep.
And $200 toys at the bottom end.
Yep.
And many machines in between. Which to choose? A recurring mistake I made as a novice was under buying tools. And this was the case with my first table saw. In less than a week, I was running up against its limitations and wishing I bought more saw. Problems ranged from a small ripping capacity, an adequate power for cutting 1.5-inch thick hardwood, and an oddball 9-inch diameter blade. After an unhappy relationship, the saw finally died in a cloud of acrid smoke during the most time-sensitive job of my career.
Yeah.
I paid dearly for the low price of that bargain saw. What would you look for in a good table saw? Get one with a 10-inch diameter blade that can cut to the center of a 40-inch wide sheet. Saws with motors that draw 12 to 15 amps of current will give you the power you need. And if you're like most home wood shoppers, table saw portability is important, too. There's never enough room in the workshop, so a saw that's easily moved pays off by freeing up floor space when you're not using it. Saws are available that satisfy all these important technical requirements, yet weigh less than 100 pounds. The next one, tool he recommends.
I'll tell you what, why don't we stop there and finish this next week?
Okay, we can do that.
Because we're about 16 minutes in. Now, let me just say one thing before we go to break. I this is a sighted guy, obviously.
Yeah.
And for him.
No, it's not a sighting. This is Charlie McDonald.
Oh, this is a blind guy.
Yeah.
But he got the article.
I don't agree.
Somebody.
Oh, he got the article from some sighted site.
Yes. So.
Because the most important thing in my shop is my chop saw.
Well, I agree. I mean, for a good starter, I'd take him on the table saw. I mean, just add one thing to it. I liked what all he said. I could do away with the portability as the main ingredient to me on a table saw is a good fence.
And yeah, that's the second thing.
That's where you're going to pay money But that, to me, determined. I mean, the 10-inch cut, yay, I agree. Portability, okay. But, man.
The fence is.
And
the...
then I think in his overall assessment, I'd like to add one thing. I think you have to, if you know the reason you're buying the tool. I was sort of a novice, too, but I did have one thing in mind, and I've done it several times. I bought cheap, if I can use that term, because I knew what I was going to do with it, that I was going to sell it as soon as I got through with it and just use whatever
okay,
I lost.
You weren't in the woodwork, in for the long haul.
That's right. And I knew whatever money I lost, I was going to just charge it off to rent. But yeah. If you were in it for the long haul, yeah, bigger is better in that regard, I think. You know?
Yeah,
but
okay.
I think for a blind person starting out a shop, a compound miter saw is the best first investment you can make. And mine is not real expensive, but that's all you have, isn't it, Sean?
Yeah, as of right now, it sure is.
I've read the entire email.
Yeah.
And that's his third.
That's his third.
That's on his third.
Is his router
what's
the second?
Router's number two. And the miter saw.
Router saw is important, and a table saw is important. But I think for a blind person, I believe that a chop saw or a compound miter saw is the nucleus of my shop. Now, Robert Todd says, because Robert Todd's buying plywood.
Yeah, he's cutting
gigantic sheets of plywood, which I'm not doing. I'm buying two-by-fours and building picnic tables, so that'd be the difference.
I think it's knowing what you're doing. And in my case, like I think on my first go-around, I think my table saw was most important. But right now, and I'm all reinvesting something, I'm fixing to build a fence, and the chop saw is going to be exactly
for your first
what
project,
I need,
Patterson,
you know?
Table saw would have been the thing you would have needed the most.
For your first project,
depends on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I need a chop saw and don't even need a table saw.
That's right. So.
Well, maybe you can talk someone into lending you theirs, but I doubt it.
I'm going to buy one. A big 12-inch compound miter. The sliding.
It's not a compound miter saw.
It's a sliding compound miter saw, but you can cut big stuff with it.
Let's call something else, isn't it? Is there another name for that?
I think it's a sliding.
Yeah, when you slide the wood into the
miter. Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe McDonald there can tell us.
That's maybe so. All right. Well, shall we go to guest? I guess, since somebody's got the music, a little bumper music.
We'll be back with our guest.
We'll go to guest and be back with more of the exciting Blind Handyman Show in just a moment.
Right.
Putting these little programs together for you. We hope you're enjoying them too. We've been on with the Blind Handyman for more than a year now. We've done 10 Blind Like Me shows. We're having one little problem you can help us with. We always need guests for both shows, and we sometimes have a problem finding them. If you'd like to be a guest on either show, or you know someone who might make a good interview, email us at one of the following addresses: Blind Handyman, all one word, at hotmail.com, or Blind Like Me, all one word, at thqcom.net. Also, if you have ideas for future shows, include them in your email. We look forward to hearing from you. And please tell your friends about the show. Thanks again from all of us at the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me. Contact information. The Blind Handyman. Blind Handyman, all lowercase, one word, at hotmail.com. That's Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Contact information. Blind Like Me. Blind Like Me. Lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Contact information. Blind Handyman listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Contact information. Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your contact information.
is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often from blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here's more of the show with Don Shaw.
All right. Our guest today is, lives in one of Don Patterson's favorite cities. Well, mine too, Las I guess, Vegas. For that matter. Las Vegas, yeah.
Area code.
Yeah, that's right.
Having people call me, collect, wire me money. Something.
That's right.
Well, next time we're out there, we'll just go by Butch's house.
Yeah. Butch
Bussin.
Very good. I'm Butch Bussin, and I guess everybody else is all, we're all conferenced together?
We're all conferenced together. We're actually not conferenced together. We're feeding you a what's called a mix minus from the console.
Oh, okay.
And so you can hear the bumper music and the commercials and everything. And so your phone is patched into the console so you can hear, should be able to hear all four of us. How about
okay.
that?
How
right.
does he do it?
That's right.
It's amazing. How does he do
what
it?
What a deal.
What a deal. Well, how are you? You're in Las Vegas, Nevada, right?
Oh, yes, yes. I moved here about 3 years ago.
Is that from where?
I grew up in northwest Kansas in a very small town of about 100 people.
100 people.
Whoa.
The kind of town that a blind guy could walk around in?
Yep. I walked all over there for years and years without a cane. We had gravel streets, no sidewalks or anything.
Yeah.
Really?
That was cool. So you've been blind all your life?
Yes, yeah.
And when you were a kid, you just walked around and thought nothing about it?
Oh, yeah.
And you learned the principle of aerodynamics occasionally, that if you walk off of a porch and there's nothing there, you won't fly.
Oh, yeah,
you
yeah.
just fall.
I did that a foot and on my bicycle. I experienced the process of lack of flight several times.
Oh, you rode your bike around town, too?
Oh, yeah.
So you could hear well enough back then to do that?
Oh, yeah. I can still hear, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, I got to make a lot of noise to get that echo back now, man. You know, the echo that you get back when you're about to hit something?
Oh, right.
I have to make a lot of noise now. Clap my hands and all kind of things. Because my old ears are getting bad. I'm not much older than you. I'm 62. How old are you?
55.
Well, it'll come to you,
are you
boy.
Totally blind, Butch?
Right, yeah.
Okay. And, yeah, I had another totally blind friend that used to ride their bike all the time. They could do pretty good, you know,
when I was a kid.
Open spaces.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I rode the bicycles on the streets of San Antonio. I mean, not downtown, but down our street. I could go around that tree as good as those sighted boys. I knew that tree was there.
So,
I could hear it.
It kind of a little old to be just uprooting and moving off. What was the attraction to Las Vegas?
I got married.
Oh, okay. That'll do it. That'll do it every time. Whisper in my ear. Blow in my ear, and I'll follow you anywhere, right?
Yeah, yeah. So here I am in Las Vegas.
What a deal.
He can't say a thing about getting married because he got married about 2 months ago.
Yeah, and she just won't move to Las Vegas.
Don Patterson.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. Huh?
I got married in Las Vegas. It's been several years ago. But what do you do out there?
Right now I am an employment specialist. I work for the state of Nevada, Bureau of Services to the Blind, and I help other, not just blind people, but basically all people with disabilities to find employment.
And this is a state-run thing that you do?
Yeah, I work for Bureau of Services to the Blind, and in Nevada, they're kind of two separate departments, but I mean, officially they're separate, but we go, you know, we share some of the same people and stuff. So
Bureau of Services, and that's Nevada's answer to the Commission for the Blind, or what?
Yeah, basically.
I think so. Uh-huh. So Butch, one the obvious question then: how employment friendly toward blind people are the casinos?
Well, it's like anything, and quite honestly. And you all know this, the less vision a person has, the more we have to convince what I call, quote, normal, quote, people we're capable of doing things.
You know, obviously they couldn't do dealing and all that, but I'm thinking of money counting or repair, slot machine repair, or, you know, I mean, if anything.
Well, that's all electronic anymore. Yeah. The old mechanical slots went away years and years ago. It's all like video games, cathode ray tubes and circuit boards and integrated circuits and things.
So then it hadn't been necessarily a boon for blind folks.
Oh, no. Okay. The only place we're trying to get it in is in PBX and reservations and those kind of things. And then, of course, we have to go in and make sure that, and try and make the systems accessible with speech or large print or whatever the person happens to need.
All right, and that's is that the kind of thing you do? You're involved in?
Somewhat. Mostly my job. I've only had this job for a little less than a year, so
okay.
I'm still learning. Pretty much my job is not so much the technical end of it, although technology is my first love, as you know from our discussion last Saturday. But primarily my job is to work with the clients and work with employers and convince them, you know, to hire the disabled and what we're really capable of doing and that type of thing. Mm.
Now, I've noticed from some of your posts on the list that you are quite knowledgeable about electronics.
Oh, yes, that's my first love. Basically, I got my ham radio license in about 1961 when I was in the seventh grade.
Uh-huh.
And in those days, novice tickets were not renewable. So my novice ticket expired. I didn't even get on the air.
Whoa.
And nobody in my family had a clue about radio or knew anything about even putting up an antenna, so I had no help at all. And then in 67, I, of course, kept my interest up over the years and actually got my general license in 67. No, 68, I guess. Anyway, but I've been licensed ever since.
But with your novice ticket, you never actually got on the air with your novice ticket?
No.
Wow.
Boy, that's sad, isn't it, huh?
Yeah, I thought so.
no one would help you know what you did.
Because in these 100 people in Kansas, right, these 100 people, nobody was interested, right?
Well, the closest ham was 40 miles, and pretty much, I don't know, there was one guy that showed interest until I bought his receiver he wanted to sell, and then he disappeared.
And he faded away. So you
well,
had a receiver.
HQ-110, for those of you who remember that thing.
It was a what now?
HQ-110.
HQ-110. What is the one I have? I've got one pre-war in HQ-129.
Yeah. No, that was in the old rack mount. Now, this was, you know, 19, late 50s,
yeah.
Vintage, tube-type, Hammerland, ham bands only.
Uh-huh.
Whoa.
And so you could listen to everybody, but you couldn't. You had no transmitter whatsoever.
Right.
And you were using this HQ with a long wire? Just put up a long wire?
Yep.
That's all you could do.
That's all I knew how to do.
And it did not have AM on it.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, all right. But you weren't an AMDX, or you were a ham. That's what you
wanted. Yeah, right.
I have an old Heathkit SB, 200 linear in mint condition.
Yeah.
I'd sure like to unload.
I'll bet you
it
would.
Is in excellent condition, too.
Yeah.
Those were a nice amp. They ran 572Bs, as I recall.
I think that sounds about right, because I think I paid dearly for some. Like I said, they were new 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been turned down in 16
years. And used very little, yeah.
Are you on the blind hams list?
No, I'm inactive, actually. I mean, I did the novice, but I was a late bloomer, 84, and got my advance, but I understand I'm back to a general now, you know.
Right.
I did my code for the extra, and you got a year-long certificate, and I never did take the writing part. You know, I did the code, and then that expired, and then I really sort of dropped out.
But well, I always wondered why something worked. I mean, when you turn the radio on, what happened? You know, how did it work? How did it
get
the signals? And so it's always been my first love. And when I got out of high school, I attended our area vocational technical school, and I actually took two-year courses in 3 years, and we studied everything from vacuum tubes to transistors to refrigeration to industrial wiring and the whole gambit.
So you learned a whole lot then.
Oh yeah.
Did you have a chance to use that as to gain employment at some time?
Basically, I've been self-employed all my life until I moved here. After I got out of school, I opened up a small repair shop there, and then I worked part-time for the local TV shop. I did all his tower work and helped him deliver appliances, and I helped him work on the things he didn't know how to troubleshoot. I got wound up helping him with.
Now, you did all his tower work, did you say?
Yeah.
What, like what kind of?
Climbing towers and putting up TV antennas and coax and other
things. Okay. This is not a two-way guy. This is a TV shop?
Yeah, although I did, yes. At that time, it was just TV.
Yeah, and so you were able of course, the schematic. I mean, how did you get by? You couldn't read the schematic on the TV.
Well, of course, I worked with him and with his son, and I would have them read me the diagram, and I'd say, okay, let's check the voltage here, and, you know, what goes here, here, here. And then I was always very, very good at theory, so I was able to say, wait a minute, we got to have a open cathode resistor or something. There's no way it should be this high on the cathode and that type of thing.
Yeah, so there's a resistor gone.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you had no way in the early days of checking voltages. You had to have somebody read you.
Oh, no. Actually, I did. When I went to Votec, the outfit called, I think Tom Benham is still around, Science Products for the Science for the Blind, I believe it was called, actually built, you could buy, was those of you who remember the old Simpson 260?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They modified one of those and replaced the meter movement with a half-circle braille scale.
Whoa.
And a knob with a pointer, had a Wheatstone bridge and an audio circuit. And basically what you did is you turned the pointer till you got a null, and that was your reading.
Wow.
Now, the only gotcha to that was, of course, the scale was linear, and it was divisible by 10. It had like 10, say 100-fold scale.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then you had, between each 10 and 20, you had like 12, 14, 16, 18, 20 was two big dots and, single
dots. Okay, yeah.
22, 24.
Like the clock, okay.
Yeah. But on ohms, of course, the scale isn't linear, so we had to use a conversion table. So we had a braille conversion table that if it read, say, 5.3, and you were on the 1K scale, you looked up in the conversion table, and it would tell you what the resistor was.
Okay.
And so that's basically what I used for years and years and years. And I can't even tell you the name of the company. Somebody finally came out with a talking meter. This was pre-Radio Shack. And I think I paid like $550 for that thing.
Whoa.
And this was back in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
But until that, that's what I used. And then in 1980, I got into satellite TV back when we used the big dishes.
Uh-huh.
And I sold and installed satellite television. In the mid-70s, I got in when the CB craze was going on. I got into two-way radio.
CB repair, huh?
So I sold and repaired CBs and commercial business band two-way radio systems and repeater systems. And so pretty much from then on, I ran my own business. I ran commercial two-way radio sales and service, satellite television installation, and TVRO, and those receive only, and that type of thing.
And so you've been able to stumble around all these years, and actually you're still alive, so you obviously made a living doing this.
Oh, yes.
What a deal.
That's wonderful.
It is.
Create those own, that's, create those jobs for yourself. Sometimes for blind people that works out better. So now these satellite systems that you install, those old C-band dishes, you go out to a guy's house, person's house, and hook this thing up yourself?
Yeah.
Someone take you? Of course, someone would have to take you.
Oh, yeah, sure. I had a demo trailer. In fact, it's still sitting back in Kansas. I had a demo trailer with a big 10-foot dish.
Yeah.
And it was had a concrete slab on the bottom about 3 inches thick. So, otherwise they got pretty top-heavy in the wind. So this was a heavy thing.
Yeah.
And we'd go out there, and we'd demo the thing. We had little trailer jacks on each corner so you could level the thing. The trailer had to be level so the dish would track, across the arc.
Sure.
And we would level that, and basically, usually we took the TV and receiver right out on the trailer, and so you knew when you could hear what you were doing and, get the thing, get everything tracked properly. Then we'd run the wires in the house and let them try it for 2 or 3 days, and hopefully they would decide they just couldn't live without it.
In other words, you would leave the trailer there at their house.
Yep.
And let them experience.
And you would set the dish where it worked.
Yeah.
And then you would run coax to the house to their TV.
Yeah, we would take the receiver. Once we set it up outside, and, of course, in those days you ran several wires. You had a cable that ran the dish, that actually moved the dish.
Yeah.
You had a cable that ran the polarity thing, the change polarity. In the initial days, it was actually a TV rotor.
Well, you had two of those, didn't you? Wasn't it the polarity one way and then the other way?
Depended on the system. Some of them used two coax cables. The original systems used AR 22 or type of rotor. I forget the model number. And it literally turned the LNB 90 degrees, LNA 90 degrees. That's how you change polarity in the early systems. And so we ran that wire in the house. You ran the 5-wire cable that moved the dish into the house, and you ran the coax cable from the down converter or the two cables, whatever system it was, into the receiver.
Yeah.
This all tied into the receiver, which in turn the modulator then fed the television set.
And this was your method of selling, was taking this dish out there and letting them keep this for 3 or 4 days, and then they decide that they couldn't, they had to see.
Couldn't live without it.
Absolutely.
The untouchables on, you know.
And remember, I grew up in an area when we had one channel. I mean, it was funny, because when I ran the shop there.
Yeah.
And this guy called up one day, and he was just having an account. I said, "You got to come out here and fix our TV." I said, "My wife just have an account." I said, "What's the problem?" I said, "We only get one channel." I cracked up. I said, "There's nothing wrong with your TV."
There's only one channel.
There is only one channel. And that's true. That's all we got out there.
So
what a plan!
And so you had a friend who helped you.
Yeah, I had a good friend that drove me around,
and you'd sell them this system. I had one of these old C-band. I bought it in 1990. That was a little late, wasn't it? But now I've got the little dish.
That's what I have too here.
Yeah, I've got two of them. You have dish or DirecTV?
I have DirecTV.
It's about the same thing, isn't it?
Six one, half dozen the other. Yeah.
I think so. You get 30 music channels and all that type.
Yep.
And I bought an extra one for the studio, because I had to have that in my big monitor in the studio.
Oh, yeah.
I had to, you know, there was no way to get away from that.
Yeah.
And they're cheap.
Yeah, they are now.
They're cheap now.
One I sold, in fact, I put it in with snow on the ground.
Yeah?
These dishes, they were heavy. They were solid fiberglass, single-piece dishes.
They were big, gigantic.
Now, we're talking about the C-band dish?
Yeah.
Oh, they were huge.
They were.
We put them on a 6-inch pipe, and you set this pipe in about a yard of concrete.
Yeah.
And we put this thing in, and I think it was the 3rd of January, 1981, was my first system I sold and put in. There was snow on the ground. We put that puppy in.
Yeah.
And it sold for something like $6,000.
Whoa. My heavens. That, compared to nowadays, they'll give you one if you'll buy the service for 2 years.
But remember, in those days, I mean, this was all brand new, very expensive technology.
Yeah. Yep.
Nothing was scrambled.
Yeah.
Everything up there was free. I mean, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I really miss my C-band dish, because you could get New York's, you could get In Touch.
Yes.
In Touch Radio Reading Service was on.
On SCPC,
C-band.
Yes.
Yeah, you could get that, and you could get, and at one time, there was a guy from Dallas that was feeding formats to radio. I mean, he was feeding radio stations music, and I had a receiver with two dials that you could tune one, you know, each channel separately, so you could have stereo.
Right.
And there were several on this one. One transponder. There were several different formats, and they were in analog at that time. This has been 15 years ago, but it finally went. I mean, they finally. And the first one I bought. This guy said, "Well, I won't charge you for programming. I'll just call you every week and give you the code." Well, then they got to doing the codes every day. So it was time to buy.
Yeah,
it was time to buy programming then. You know.
Yeah, I was involved in that. That's another long story I could go into. I had lots of fun doing that.
You don't mean you had the illegal codes there, did you, Butch? That's not what you're saying.
No, not me.
Not you. No, Butch, you wouldn't do that.
I think there's isn't there an expiration date on this? I mean,
my wife's a lawyer. Don't worry about it.
Claim amnesty.
So did you go to any college? Did you go get a degree, or did you just forgot about all that?
Well, finally, and I got into computers. I'm a technological nerd. I love high-tech things. So I had to get a computer so they could talk.
Yeah.
In 1983, I bought an Apple IIe and got into computers, and I've worked in, and I've learned how to program and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So besides all my other high-priced hobbies, I got into computers, and I also ran a computer store. I built and sold a computer system.
Really?
And in 91, I decided, I should go get a piece of paper and maybe get a degree. So I did wind up actually getting an associate's degree in computer science, but it was so boring. I carried a 4.0 GPA all the way through my 2-year degrees, and I decided that was enough. I'd quit when I was ahead, so I did.
Yeah.
Well, I was really going to ask you, that was going to be my next question, because just uprooting from Kansas and then going to Nevada and signing on with the state agency, and I know they claim there's no age discrimination, but we don't always. And I was sort of wondering what your qualifications were, because really that was sort of a good deal for you to kind of wind up with that job, because I'm 61 and I have sort of looked around in the market, and sometimes it's not always available, you know.
Well, I was able to convince the right people that basically I guess I had what they were looking for. Is I had the experience of running my own business, so I understood the employer's problems.
Right.
I have been a client in not only this state, but in Kansas and other places, so I understand that from the client's side. I understand their frustrations and what we go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been blind since birth, so I understand the technology and the adaptations. And
so it was a natural job for you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You just had the right, like I say, I've gone around here a couple of times and thought I was qualified for something, and either age-wise or you never know the reason, you know, you never hear back from...
Well, the hardest thing I found was that no one counted self-employment for anything.
Right.
Yeah,
they didn't
true.
Care. They
That's
didn't. You know, it meant nothing that I had, you know, that I had operated my own store for years and years and was able to do all these things. It didn't count for anything.
Yeah.
You mean by your sighted brethren didn't count it?
Exactly.
For anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, they oftentimes don't understand. You're dealing with bureaucrats. You got to remember that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And in this day and time, a lot of them are Republicans, so you're really in trouble. But that's another story. I knew that we'd get a laugh. Well, it sounds like so you're married to a nice lady, and she moved you to Vegas. Obviously, you're
what a deal.
Well, come on, Butch, fess up. I mean, you're 50 something years old. Is she a showgirl? How come she's married to 25 year old?
She grew up in South Pasadena.
California or Texas?
Yep, California. And believe it or not, we met online.
Well, good for you.
What a deal.
Started a list. I don't know. Some of you may remember it back in 99 called Blind Singles.
Uh-huh.
And the intent of the list was that I wanted a place where we as blind folk could go and discuss things that only we understand, like how do you handle the driving problem? How do you handle the first date? How do you, these various things that we go through.
How do you explain that to your girlfriend to be that your mother's going to drive you?
Yeah, that you want to use the Braille method or, whatever.
Yeah.
But in any case, I started that list just as a place to handle these kind of discussions. And she signed on the list for some reason or other. But she ran across it in a search somehow. And I don't know, she commented and I commented about something, and then we started writing privately, and then we started making phone calls, and we wound up coming to Vegas to meet for the first time, and one thing led to another, and we wound up getting married about
that. Now, she is a sighted lady?
Yeah.
And she just stumbled across this list.
Yeah, she had, she had dated a blind guy before, so she was kind of interested, I guess, and she just... wanted to see kind of what it was the rest of us were like or something.
I keep trying to come up with, if you go blind, you'll never go, what the other saying is. I think we've all heard. Anyway, I can't find anything that rhymes with blind, but that's sounds like you've had a good life and your attitude's good, sir.
Yeah.
And that's what we like to see, don't we?
Well, it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy the list because what I found on that list, I mean, there is no way, I mean, I'm very good at what I do. And I love what I do, but there's no way I could build a deck. I mean, I couldn't do that. I don't,
You couldn't do what?
Build a deck on the back of my house.
Well, sure you could. Why couldn't you? If I can, you can.
Yeah, I don't know. But my point is, everybody has their own skills.
Yeah.
And their own things, and things that they're good at, and things they've learned how to do and love doing.
Well,
that's
where the list
is
good.
Mine is electronics and wires and all this kind of audio. And this
wish I was there. We'd build you a deck and you could teach me some things.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with you because I could build a hell of a deck, but I couldn't tell you a diode from a volume control.
I wired my own house. I built my house back in Kansas in 76.
Yeah.
And I wired the whole house, and a friend of mine came by, and we put in the heating system and everything. And I'd never done that before, but it wasn't any difficulty.
But learned something about refrigeration in your tech school.
Yeah, sure.
So you knew a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go, and you're on our list, and we're glad to have you.
Yeah,
you're
fun. You guys do a good job.
You're the kind of them.
I have one quick question for Butch.
Right.
What do you still do ham wise? Is there anything there?
Oh, yes. I'm active on pretty much all the bands. I'm not as active as I used to be.
Okay.
I have an HF rig set up here in Vegas with an antenna.
I mean, you're kind of 80 meters or?
80, 40, 20, 15, 10.
I see.
I have 2 meters, 440.
I didn't figure with computers out there was much to it anymore.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Well, the convention, I think the ACB convention is going to be in Vegas in 2005.
All right.
And so my wife comes out twice a year, and I've been several times. We just stay here.
I'm in the phone book.
Yeah.
So for heaven's sake, if you get out here, call me.
I'll find you. Right. We'll go do dinner and spend a little time together.
Yeah.
Butch, thank you, sir. You've been a delightful guest.
Thanks
we appreciate you.
See ya.
All right. We'll visit with you later. Back with more of the Blind Handyman in just a minute.
this is Phil Parr. We're enjoying putting these little programs together for you. We hope you're enjoying them, too. We've been on with the Blind Handyman for more than a year now. We've done 10 Blind Like Me shows. We're having one little problem you can help us with. We always need guests for both shows, and we sometimes have a problem finding them. If you'd like to be a guest on either show, or you know someone who might make a good interview, email us at one of the following addresses: Blind Handyman, all one word, at hotmail.com, or Blind Like Me, all one word, at thucom.net. Also, if you have ideas for future shows, include them in your email. We look forward to hearing from you. And please tell your friends about the show. Thanks again from all of us at the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me. The Blind Handyman. Blind Handyman, all lowercase, one word, at hotmail.com. That's Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Contact information. Blind Like Me. Blind Like Me, lowercase, all one word, at txucom.net. That's Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Contact information. Blind Handyman listserv. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. That's Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Contact information. Blind Handyman at hotmail.com. Blind Like Me at txucom.net. Blind Handyman dash subscribe at yahoogroups.com. Email us often and give us your opinion. If you'd like to be a guest on one of our shows, give us your contact information.
Listening to the Blind Handyman. Our email address is blindhandyman at hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Oh, you came back. I wonder why that's only in one channel, Houston.
I don't know. Let's see. I'm looking here.
Do you have not both pots pulled up? One and two?
I have, Yeah,
one, two, three, four.
They're down now, but I mean they were up. Yes, sir.
I can hear out of both sides.
Yeah, I can hear out of both.
But yeah, but the Atmer was only in one channel.
I noticed that.
So anyway, I think we can probably survive that.
I certainly hope so.
Don, I do too. Butch Bussin, what a guy!
Yeah, man,
that was great.
Danced to his own drummer, did his own thing, always done his own thing. Didn't take anything from anybody. Two way shop. You know, computer shop, all that kind of thing.
What
they did a talking computer in 82.
Yeah. And then got to be an old guy, an old man, and went to Las Vegas and just got a job.
What a move that would be, wouldn't it?
Kind of nice. Well, we didn't ask him if that's the first time he'd been married. What if it's a second or third?
He'd have probably said that was none of our business.
He'd have said that. He'd have told us the truth. I'm sure he would. Anyway, you want to talk about, we finally solved the great fence question.
The great fence question.
You know what you're going to buy. You know what you're going to put up. Right. So tell us what you're going to do.
Okay, as if everybody's been following the saga, the warden and I. It's coming out in paperback, second edition. Yeah. We purchased our little 3 acres out there, and we're building our dream home. And, of course, about the second thing you want is a fence. And fences for what? Keep something in, keep things out, or just decorative, or to just set the perimeter.
Got to decide that.
We've looked at all of them, and I've priced it. And then also, it's sort of like the fellow was talking about, tool selection. You know, price cannot be the only consideration. What are you going to use it for?
That's right.
How long do you want it? How much effort are you willing to put into it? And so I've ran the whole gamut. I've started with pricing. I mean, that has to be the first consideration.
Yeah.
How much is it going to cost? And then secondly, how big is it? How long is it? How many feet are you going to do? And then, of course, cost and that. And then you go, well, then what can you afford? And then what type of material can you maintain, because maintenance is a problem, and then how will the weather affect the material that you choose?
All right.
And so we got off into that. We looked at ornamental iron. It's probably the most expensive if you're not even figuring in the post. If you buy it by the truckload, and I would have qualified for a truckload, I could get the ornamental 4 foot high with 4-inch pickets, 2 rails, they call it, wrought iron, $48 for 8 foot. So 6 feet.
Whoa.
$6 a foot, I'm sorry, but that is not including post.
Whoa.
And that's just that, yeah. So it gets up there pretty quick. If you're talking about 1,700
well,
feet of fence.
Well, if you're going to do 4 acres,
wow.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So
well, if you're doing 1,700.
Oh, gracious.
So then I abandoned that, and then I talked to y'all some about when I find the salvage pipe. Actually, they call it mill reject pipe.
Yeah.
But it's in Tulsa, and I'm here. I could get it at a good
you
price.
Could ship
actually,
it,
if I could use that, if I could use that and do my fence, especially with wooden posts, I could come in for about $1.50 a foot, a running foot. But
big difference
it's getting
there.
In here, and it comes in 24-foot lengths. Could I handle it? And then you've got to paint it. And so that was the drawback on that.
Yeah,
so
I mean, that's a big drawback.
It's not stainless steel.
No, it's carbon steel pipe. It's
and either, it'll rust.
Well, it yeah. It,
painting
it,
would be a
painting.
Besides
would be
that,
a
she wouldn't
drawback.
Like the color. It'd be gunmetal gray or something.
Well,
she wouldn't like that.
We could paint it black. You know, that's kind of a popular color for wrought iron.
Then you're
going to
repaint it.
Yeah, then you may have to repaint it.
Oh, yeah, the
was
painting would be a major.
And like deal. I say, and then handling 24-foot lengths that weigh 55 pounds. Or it weighs like a foot, 2 pounds per foot,
yeah,
something like that.
It'd be bulky. And
so I 86'd that idea, or the warden did. Maybe it was. I don't think I had a vote. Anyway, and so so then we looked into PVC. Okay, PVC is nice.
It's light.
It's light. It's but there you get into a problem. It comes in any color you want as long as it's white.
Don't have to paint it.
You do not have to paint it. But if you've looked at your lawn furniture lately, you can see that PVC can kind of weather.
It can.
Know? Also, the reason why it doesn't come in any color but white is because they tried it in black, but then the heat. The post warp in the morning. The sun stays on one side of the post,
uh-huh.
And the post warps one direction. And then by afternoon, when the sun's on the other side, the black absorbing the color and the post warp.
Hadn't thought about that, but it makes sense.
And also, even on a do-it-yourself basis, you're talking about $5 a foot, and that's not counting
Whoa.
Concrete. You know, to put your post in, it's just plain $5
Man.
A running foot.
And you get two or three posts to a bag of concrete, so you got some tied up in concrete.
I figured, yeah, if you
so.
Did four, if you put a quarter of a bag down in four posts, and because you're going to put a post every 8 feet.
That's a little.
But four is stretching it because when we did our fence,
right.
Really about all we really could get and have a decent amount was really three
right.
posts.
That, that'd be a little light. Right. This old boy that did mine used a bag per post.
Yeah, well, you see, and then, of course, that's a whole other theory, too, especially in wood fences. There are the concrete users versus the fence tampers.
Yeah.
The guys who tamp posts and use dirt only. And I have seen a fence put up both ways, and you couldn't tell the difference as far as sturdiness if you know what you're doing. But so PVC was kind of okay, maybe low maintenance but high cost going in. And then
yep.
And then does it weather? And then even the maintenance required on that. I asked the guy, I said, well, so what do I have to do? And he said, oh, once a year you need to take a power washer and go out there and wash this fence down. Well, you know,
whoa,
I have a power washer. And so if you're going to power wash, you could probably paint. So
yeah.
Anyway, then we went off into wood, which was my last choice. It was something I really didn't want because I
yeah,
figured wood
no
would
kidding.
Not last long. But I'm telling you, the best deal I found was split rail. It comes out if you're going to use the two rail, which is a 3 foot high fence. And like I said, we're talking, I told you earlier about that you have to decide what do you want the fence for? What's it going to do?
Right.
Our fence is perimeter only. It's not keeping anything in or out. It's just decorative.
It strictly says, this is the edge of my property. Don't cross it or you're dead. Whatever.
Decorative and or to mark the perimeter.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so what we finally decided on a three-rail, split-rail fence, you can come in, if you do it yourself, and there again, minus the concrete. But everything else is $3.39 a foot.
So it's kind of in the middle.
In the middle. And on a two-rail, it's $2.42 a foot.
Do the three-rail.
And, well, I'm going to do three-rail in the front, which is almost 300 feet, about 208, and then we're going to do two-rail down each side.
On the side.
Which will be...
Which
in,
would work out.
Which
now,
would work
now
out
the,
just
probably.
Fine.
Now, the rails bolt to the posts, or how do
they slip in notches. It's like the PVC, and I wondered, because it's like putting a Lincoln log
okay,
set
and they
together.
Notch the post for you?
They notch the post, but it's like an interior slot. But actually, when you put a post in the ground, even though it's concreted, in PVC, there's enough swag that you can get your slat. I'm not sure how that exactly works on a split rail.
Yeah.
But believe it or not, on the Internet, you can go and there's instructions on how to install a chain link fence, how to install a PVC fence, how to install a split rail fence.
All right.
And so,
because you'd have to get these suckers exactly straight before the board is going to slide through.
Seems like
right.
that
thing.
And,
unless you did it when the concrete was a little wet.
Yeah,
you know?
And you'll have to set your posts, and I think they're on like 10-foot centers because, and that's another advantage of the split rail. The rails are 10-foot long rather than 8-foot on a PVC, so you don't have to, you save a little in post.
You save a little in post.
And
that's
the,
right.
And the split rail is kind of rough cut anyway, so if there was any warping at all, it's not going to look. The fence is designed with kind of the rustic look.
Yeah.
To look not necessarily geometric or symmetric, I guess you could say. So that's really, and like I say, and this is where I got into the. There's one company here in Texas. They have three. Outlets, the League City Galveston, and they sell this. That, but believe it or not, the best prices I found were at Lowe's. Lowe's beat anybody, even including Texas.
So you know if these rails are made out of pine
red
or cedar or
red
what?
Red cedar.
Really?
You can buy pine.
That'll do you, 10 years. That'll do you about 10 years.
I think, yeah, but I think
okay.
I'm going to see.
Going to go with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've done another one, guys.
We have.
Hey, show 52. Hey. Split rail Don.
5-2. Split rail.
Right, split rail. What
if you want? I got a closing Thursday. Say it. I've finally sold that house.
All right.
If you want to go on the cruise, call me. 936-634-9500. If you want to go, you better hurry. We'll do another one next week. Don Shaw, thanks, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Split rail Don. That's what we call him now.
Yeah, Farmer Don.
As usual, you did a wonderful job, Tony.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
We'll see you folks next week. Stay tuned for the Blind Like Me show. If you're listening on ACB Radio and it's the summertime or the fall time, Dale Campbell is coming up cooking tacos and
tacos.
Things of that nature. We'll see y'all next week. Thank you very much for listening. I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions, 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.